back with episode 740 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and even though I always DVR these shows, at least I had a good reason to pause once or twice this time.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm really excited about some non-TV news this week.
Oh, yeah. We have quite a selection of news this time around. It was spread out pretty evenly among many different types of topics. So, we're going to be getting into some things we normally would not get into. Not only that, but we may, depending on how long the news takes, get into some of our episodic discussion. There's not a huge amount this week, so maybe in this episode, maybe in next episode. We'll find out. But we also have some feedback that we'll be getting into somewhere along the lines. So, yeah, we're going to start now. Get our special content out of the way.
Certainly. Unfortunately, the robot gauze decided to break you up slightly, but I think I know what you meant. But yes, as always, we are more than happy to spoil you with good news when it's the news, and it'll be bad news if you haven't watched these few episodes that we had to keep up with this week.
Mm-hmm, that's right. And we are going to go ahead and start with some our headline story, so to speak, because it's actually good news about the recognition given to some of our favorite genre stars on the television screens. So, Edmund, if you don't mind.
Yes, and this is for once, amazingly, for a show concentrating on genre TV, news from last week's Emmy Awards. Of course, as I'm sure most of our listeners were aware, the Tatiana Maslany from Orphan Black was one of the notable snubs the first couple of seasons the show was on, and of course most of our science fiction shows in particular do rarely get recognition at the Emmys, so it was a very nice thing last year that she did finally get nominated, which she did again this year, and this year she actually won the dang thing, much to her surprise. You could kind of tell in terms of her acceptance speech and her expression as it was announced, and then as if that wasn't enough, in the lead actor category, Rami Malek from Mr. Robot won in the show's naturally first season and his very first nomination, he also seemed a little bit stunned, but not so stunned that he couldn't get in that fabulous quote from the show. Yes, Rami, we were all seeing it too. This is of course in addition to Game of Thrones repeating as best drama, and of course, as the resident number one fan of the Americans, much as I did feel a tinge of regret at seeing both the show and its two lead actors not get the award. If it had to go to anybody else, this was pretty much my number one second choices. So, congratulations to all, and let's hope this is a trend for some of the tweaking they've been doing with the nominations and the way the voting goes for the final award, that perhaps some of our favorite shows will actually start getting a little more recognition than they have in the past.
Absolutely. And let's see. And any other comments there, Gary? Your thoughts on that?
I'm not a follower of the show, but as to echo part of what Edmund said, science fiction, even fantasy, we always get overlooked as if these genres are somewhat less. That unless it's about a hospital or a legal firm, it doesn't quite measure up. And this definitely shows us that they are starting to pay attention to us. We're quite a force to be reckoned with at the box office, and now they're starting to see we're quite a force to be reckoned with on the smaller screen as well. So I'm looking forward to this as the maybe not quite the dawn of a new age, but just a hey, look what they're doing over there. It's not so bad. So.
Yeah, just one. This does make up slightly for all of that that lack of recognition that Fringe got, especially in the acting department. Especially John Noble and Anna Torv and all those multiple versions of themselves that and then themselves playing themselves that they graced us with for all those seasons, and nobody seemed to notice.
Well, it's just like we've been saying, good to get that recognition out there. All right, moving over to network television, there's some news out of ABC. Gary.
Oh, yes, and I was honestly surprised to read this news story when it first came through. What we're talking about is a revival of sorts. It's the first episode, at least as we're recording this, of MacGyver recently aired, and ABC has decided that they're going to go back to the wellhouse again and pull out another old series. I didn't guess this offhand, but it sounds promising. Well, the series that we're talking about is Magnum P.I., the series that Tom Selleck, of course, rose to stardom, and that ran for many years and earned Golden Globe and Emmy Awards for during its run. The twist this time around, though, rather than a reboot, they're going to be just going further with it. Magnum's daughter, Lily, is going to be the focus of the new Magnum PI series. It will be set back in Hawaii once more, with Lily being a former naval intelligence officer, watching out for international crime and other things while she's sitting on the scenic beaches of Hawaii. In case you haven't quite grabbed onto this yet, I would like to mention that John Rogers from Leverage fame has already completed many scripts for this. So I have my fingers crossed. This character actually was originally introduced back in the original show. It's not something they're pulling out of their hat. However, whether they will continue with a direct follow-up or try to gloss over that is unknown at this point. We also don't know if Mr. Selleck will be making any cameo or other significant appearances. And more importantly, for people who are fans of the mustache, I'm not sure how it will play in this new show, given that it's that it's his daughter. We'll just have to wait and see on that.
I'm hoping that it is not present. I'm just thinking to myself. That would be not as fun. but there we are. All right. Next on the list, we have some news coming out of the CW, and this is actually pretty interesting. They've now made it possible to watch their shows without any type of cable login using an app only going forward. Now,
holy wow.
So
that's incredible.
That's right. The reason that this is actually meaningful is that, Hulu used to have the CW shows. And as we've talked about more often than not in the last few months, Hulu has been making some choices and has lost the rights to certain things. So, and one of those things is the CW shows. So you can't just go over to Hulu and watch them the day after they air anymore, which is a bit of a problem. But Hulu, of course, is subscription only as well now. So the question was, how are we going to watch it without watching it on a really bad phone app? Well, apparently now they're trying to make it easier for you to see that content, even though they have made a deal with Netflix. So essentially, they're now offering their shows on an app which can be used on every popular device from Roku, Chromecast, AirPlay, Apple TV, iOS, and Android devices, Xbox, and Amazon Fire TV. So all those devices will have the app, and you don't need to have a login from a cable account to watch on those apps, which, as some of you probably know, there are quite a few apps for television networks where they require you to put in your credentials in order to watch recently aired episodes. So according to the CW, the network will be providing full episodes on demand along with exclusive digital only content. Although the CW didn't specify exactly when the episodes will be available, CW will say it will notify you when the show airs, which suggests that Stephen Amell's Deltoids will still be available on your iPad the same time cable viewers get to watch them. So yeah, it sounds like they're going to be trying to do it in the same time frame as what they used to do on Hulu.
Wow, and when you look at that compared to the model that CBS is rolling out with their pay-only access, that's really a sort of, I almost view it as a battle between the two networks and to see which model will work. And gosh, almost always free wins. So, we'll have to see what happens. But wow, that is a huge shakeup, and for all the cord cutters and people who just get their entertainment through IP means, that's quite a reward for everyone that's doing that. So we've always talked about the breakup of the quote TV model, and geez, that's a big hammer swing right there. That's a very big one.
Even better, if you don't want the app, you can find all episodes of current shows 8 days after the season finales air on Netflix. Yeah, so there you go. When it comes to the CW, they are making it really easy to get to their content. And like I said, it is significant because CW is at least partially owned by CBS.
Mm-hmm.
So this seems to be an unusual move on their part. But there we are. That's actually going to be pretty helpful for some of us. I'm going to be very happy if that works out, that it comes out at least within a day of airing. That would be ideal, to say the least. There's just a lot of shows on the DCW that we watch. So there we are. Moving over to the cable world. Edmund?
Yes, and this is more news about Game of Thrones at the Primetime Emmy Awards. George R. R. Martin was interviewed backstage and told reporters that he has thousands of pages of fake history of everything that led up to the Game of Thrones. So there is lots of material there, and I'm writing more. Of course, that's in addition to the other things he has on his plate, like finishing The Winds of Winter. At the moment, he does still have this show to finish, and he still has two more books to write, so it's all speculation about what he might do with those thousands of pages, this is certainly teasing the possibility of HBO perhaps returning to Westeros with some prequels or some of that past history to fill in if they wish to keep the ball rolling. This is of course after, as I mentioned previously, Game of Thrones did win the Best Drama Prize, in addition to 11 other Emmys, and that in fact has brought it up to 38 total wins, which makes it the most awarded scripted series in Emmys history, passing of all things Frasier.
Wow, okay, didn't see that coming, but all right, good for them. All right, next on the list we have some news that I think horror fans are going to be pretty happy about.
Yeah, and I wouldn't call myself a diehard horror fan, but at the same time, this does sound interesting, and its providence also lends towards that. What we're announcing is that John Carpenter is going to host a short film anthology series through Robert Rodriguez's El Rey Network. This network typically features B-movie programming, the most notable being Kaiju Roareth, which was a Godzilla marathon that ran over the 4th of July weekend. It's definitely in the right home for what it is. And what he's announced is that John Carpenter will present 10 different short films, including his Chainsaw, which had been aired earlier, I believe, in the theater shows. And what he states is that he wanted to provide a new pipeline for creators of horror. He feels that the studio system is failing a lot of beginning artists, and that he wants to help get them noticed. So this is set for all you horror fans to start airing at 8 p.m. on October 30th, the night before Halloween.
Yeah.
And they'll have to see beyond those 10 episodes of what will be running.
All right. Sounds
good. And yes, one of them does involve clowns, John. I know you wanted
to. Yes.
Okay. Oh, great.
So, okay, yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah, and I've got to say, while I haven't been a huge horror fan, I mean, certainly the all of the John Carpenter films are one of the areas of the horror genre that I've always followed, and I'm also realizing seeing his picture up here with this article that as he's gotten older, John Carpenter is about the closest human equivalent we have to the Crypt Keeper, so I think this is very appropriate.
Oh, that's classic. All right. okay, we'll just move on then to some news coming out of Netflix. And this is some news regarding The Punisher. That show, the spinoff from Daredevil, may actually be starting filming in October, based on the fact that his Netflix production schedule will only be allowing him to be at New York Comic Con 2 days versus the full convention. Since it's already been auditioning and casting for parts, and there are rumors that there is going to be a 2017 release date, it seems about right that now would be when you start to film. Of course, it also opens up the possibility that the character is going to come back in The Defenders, which is also set to begin filming this fall. So it means that The Punisher is going to be in something. Additionally, there's some exciting possibilities regarding an appearance of The Punisher on, of all places, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Last week, at the red carpet premiere, Jeff Loeb invited a number of guests to the screening, and one of them, Robbie Reyes creator Felipe Smith, and also comics guest Jerry Conway, who has written for Ghost Rider in the past. So when he was introduced, Jerry Conway, Jeff Loeb introduced him as the creator of The Punisher. which Loeb then went on to say, "You will understand why I brought all these people here later in the season and why it makes sense." So it's possible, just like in the comics, there will be a confrontation between Ghost Rider and the Punisher. There are a lot of people who would be very happy about that.
Yeah, that's also interesting that they're at least allowing for the possibility of cross-pollination in the TV universe, even if not jumping over into the MCU yet.
Well, what it sets Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. up as being is maybe a very low-level type of crossroads, but we've had people from the Marvel films on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., notably Sif, a couple times, right? And we've also had some of the minor players through, you know, in some of the S.H.I.E.L.D.-related areas from like Captain America and stuff in there. So we have had the MCU films and television overlap when it comes to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So where does Netflix fit into that? If it were to, you know, overlap with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. actually becomes fairly important, which is kind of ironic considering what Chloe Bennett, for instance, was saying about it being kind of the stepchild when it comes to the attention that it gets within the MCU. Think about that for a moment, right? It's like, I wonder if they're doing that because of the public criticism, but be that as it may, we've got at least a few things that are in the development fire throughout movies and television. And the first one here, Edmund, I'm pretty happy to hear about.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, I know a while ago we had mentioned that Mark Millar and Frank Whiteley's comic Jupiter's Legacy was being considered for development as a film or series of films. This is actually from an interview in the Hollywood Reporter with Lorenzo de Bonaventura. He was being interviewed about his new film Deepwater Horizon, but mentioned that he is interested in producing superhero movies, but that the market is saturated right now. And mentioning this project that he has with Mark Millar to adapt Jupiter's Legacy, what attracted him to it was that it's not repeating what everyone else has done. It's not yet set up at a studio. Its universe is so expansive that it's in some ways more conducive to a television treatment. He naturally wouldn't turn up his nose at the opportunity to do it as a film, if that's how the pieces fall into place. Perfectly willing to do it either way. Mark Millar did respond to this on his own message boards, saying he was also pleased to take either route. He was saying the screenplay is in fact about to be turned in, but they're so excited about this massive, expansive story that this could be a lot bigger and a lot longer than any of us expected. Jupiter's Legacy, for those who aren't familiar with it, tells the story of two generations of heroes shaping and shaped by the course of world events and changing society from the early 1930s to the present day, as the younger heroes struggle with their failure to live up to their parents' legacies. I know this is something I haven't had a chance to really read them yet, but after it did come up on that previous show, I was looking around Comixology at just how many, you know, at the various different series, and was kind of thinking that myself, with this much material to delve into, that the idea of doing this as a TV series rather than a film or a few films might actually make more sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially just the fact that the stories are just the nature of the story, as they were saying, it makes sense to go that way. I think that it'll work out pretty well if they do decide to do that. Speaking of other properties that are going from film to television, perhaps, Gary.
Yes, it's been announced that another property that you would think was in the movie world is also looking at television. It's been announced by Universal Television that Vin Diesel has signed to do a first look production deal for the Riddick series. Now, while the Riddick series have never done incredibly well in the box office, they have developed a strong cult following, and the Universal's hoping that will extend out into the television realm. Vin Diesel's One Race Television production company has, of course, done other somewhat larger movies, referring, of course, to the Fast and Furious franchises, both, I believe it's 5, 6, and 7. And they've also recently brought in to coordinate everything Shanna Waterman, who recently has been responsible for 24, Live Another Day, as well as Wayward Pines. Now, of course, before you get too crazy and say, oh, geez, she also had overseen Fringe, Family Guy, American Dad, and most of the non-Simpson animated series over at Fox in the past. So she does have a reasonably good track record, and hopefully she can keep this on track. And we'll have to see what comes out of it. Vin Diesel, of course, has gotten a recent bump in popularity due to voicing Groot. And I guess he's able to pull some of these old series back out again. So, yay, good for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm perfectly happy with the Riddick stuff. I am not a huge fan, but I do appreciate the fact that he has such a passion for trying to keep that alive. That's actually pretty cool in my book. So hopefully he'll kind of get an opportunity to do so at this rate. All right. Also kind of doing that bridge between movies and television would be The Dark Tower, which we have, of course, heard a lot about. It seems like it is going to be on the verge of a big screen debut in 2017. And then the companion series on television that has been promised forever actually seems like it's going to be happening in 2018. The show will flesh out a different part of Roland's story, Roland being the main character, that of his first adventure as a young gunslinger from the fourth book in the series Wizard in Glass. Basically, the series will serve as the origin story for Idris Elba's character in the movies. So, in fact, Elba is set to appear on the show along with Tom Taylor, who plays Jake Chambers in the movies. Of course, since the show is about a younger Roland, a different actor will be cast in the role for the main part of the show. No sign that Matt McConaughey will also appear, but since he plays a sorcerer with many faces, a different actor could potentially be cast for the show. MRC and Sony Pictures, who are also releasing the film next February, will finance a 10 to 13 episode first season to begin shooting in 2017. So, let's see here. Akiva Goldsman will executive produce, along with Jeff Pinkner, Ron Howard, and Brian Grazier. Nicolaj Arcel, who is directing the Dark Tower movie, and screenwriter Anders Thomas Jensen are writing the script for the show and will also executive produce. Showrunner has yet to be named. So yeah, it looks like the film TV kind of mega franchise of the Dark Tower is still going forward, and Ron Howard is still involved, and yeah, I'm kind of impressed that that's still happening. It's certainly ambitious. You guys have any thoughts on that? I don't know. I haven't read those books, so I know that that's probably surprising to a lot of people, but just haven't really been able to do it yet.
No, I've only read one or two of the series, but I'm glad that the direction is actually still holding on, even as it seems to be languishing in production hell. So,
I see. Yes, so let's see. Moving on then to some comic book news. And Gary, why don't you get us started off here?
Oh, this was the sort of what I announced in the teaser that really shocked, surprised me, and made me go, great. What's been announced is that Marvel is having a new series come out, a new Hulk series. But not quite the Banner, the person you're thinking. It's not Banner. Rather, it's Jennifer Walters. They are dropping the she from She-Hulk, and they're going to refer to her as Hulk. They're going to follow her going back to her life as a lawyer following the Civil War II event. And she's decided that she herself is dropping it and just dropping the she part and just going to Hulk. This for me implies a great many things. Of course, anytime you use the word she on top of anything, you almost want to smirk because it seems a bit comical. And so they're doing away with that, which means if you're used to the old She-Hulk comic books where they're tongue in cheek and even sometimes breaking the fourth wall, that is not the type of series this is going to be. They really are going to move forward in a much more serious role and deal with some of her emotions of going through this whole not only the Civil War event, but also having to handle being a Hulk on a regular basis and what being a superhero really means. They've been doing some amazing work with both Captain Marvel as well as the Mockingbird comic book series, if you haven't picked either of those up yet and you're a fan of strong, smart female main characters. I definitely recommend picking those up as well and add Hulk number one to your list as well, and it's due out this December.
Very good. I mean, certainly slightly unexpected, but there you are.
Yes, it was. I'm quite thrilled that they would grab onto that character and want to move forward with her like that. So that's wonderful.
Awesome. All right. Next, we have some news also out of Marvel regarding some of the Star Wars comics that they have.
Yes, this is news of the flagship Starship book. Starting with issue 26, Yoda will be getting a whole story arc of his own when Luke encounters a story in Ben Kenobi's journal about the small green Jedi Master. Writer Jason Aaron speaking to StarWars.com, and he will be teaming up with the artist over on the Darth Vader book, Salvador LaRocca, for this storyline. He discussed how he's going to bring Yoda in. I was always trying to figure out a way for us to use Yoda. We're a bit hamstrung in terms of the time period of our main story because Yoda's chilling on Dagobah. So this was kind of the only way we could kill all those birds with one stone, to do one story that connects Luke, Yoda, and Obi-Wan all at the same time while still taking place in the three different time periods. And the challenge was to do something with Yoda that we hadn't seen before. I really wanted to see just what it was like when Yoda was going out into the galaxy and being a Jedi. Story takes place before the Clone Wars, and it's set in a world we have never seen before. We've seen Yoda as the teacher, as the wise Jedi Master, but I wanted to see Yoda just as the Jedi, so this puts him on a very unusual adventure. Also mentioned that the other big challenge with Yoda is to find something that's a challenge for him, who can pose a threat to Yoda, and he thinks they came up with an interesting answer to that question. And I was going to see if they were telling us when issue 26 is coming out, but that is the number to look for. And I imagine he might be somewhere on the cover too.
Okay. Good to know.
Please don't let the villain be Ewoks. Okay.
Well, they would be sized appropriately if they were. Think about it. Or not. All right. Moving over to some manga and anime news. We have actually a little bit more than we normally would have. That's because now that the summer season is drawing to a close, there's some pickups that we can talk about. There were some other shows that they announced that were coming back for another season that I didn't really get into. However, this one I am going to mention because I've said before that I played a lot of Tales of Zestiria, and they have an anime for that called Tales of Zestiria X. It's not exactly the same as the game. There are some significant changes to the story, which is good because then it's a little fresh even for me. But following the airing of the penultimate episode of the current adaptation, it was announced that a second season of the series will premiere in 2017. So not a whole lot of information. It just basically says the characters from the most recent installment of the Tales RPG series in Berseria, which is coming out in the U.S. Next year, also made cameo appearances in the Zestiria X adaptation earlier this first season. So yeah, it looks like there's going to be some crossover going on there, which is pretty cool. So yay. I now have a reason to catch up. Also, another show that I've heard good things about, Edmund.
This is the manga and now anime, Seven Deadly Sins, which will be getting a new season. However, there are no dates or details announced yet. This is based on the popular manga serialized by Suzuki Nakaba, first adapted into an anime in 2014, although a four-episode special OVA did also air this summer, but for those who are into Seven Deadly Sins, just rest assured you will be getting more sometime.
There you go. That's good news, because I know that for a lot of people that I know who are into the first or the existing material, if at any rate. And finally, Gary, some good news for people who are looking for more events to do in New York.
Yeah, John, pencil in your calendar if you haven't Boston in already. We have a new convention coming to New York City. No, not another Star Trek one. At least they haven't made mention of that yet. However, what we are announcing is a new anime convention. It's going to be called Anime NYC. It's scheduled for next year in November in 2017 at the Javits Center. The event wants to become a major anime convention in New York City. The last major one, the New York Anime Festival, was folded into New York Comic Con back in 2012, and basically all the programming was subsumed. But this event will be anime only, and they'll begin selling tickets as well as releasing more details about the convention this November. The convention's title sponsor is Crunchyroll with Funimation and Viz Media, as well as Kenyaya. Ah, darn it, I got this John disease. Kino Kenyaya bookstore has also signed on as sponsors. So with names like that, I have even I know that that's a pretty good strength of sponsors to come in. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about this. And if my daughter has anything to say about it, I'm sure I will.
Kinokuniya bookstore. Kino.
We finally found the name you don't trip over, John.
I finally found words I can pronounce. It's only because I believe that's how you say it, because I've actually been to the bookstore a couple times.
Okay.
So yes.
John, you know more about this world than I probably ever will. Is more always a good thing? Do you feel that it's going to take away from anything else out there in the
Well, the thing about New York City and anime cons is that there haven't been a whole lot of them. Mm-hmm. The one that was probably the most successful for a while was the New York Anime Festival, which got folded into New York Comic Con first as a separate concurrent event. A couple people may remember. Actually, Edmund, I think one time when we were both there, it was up in that one area, kind mm-hmm. of off on its own.
Yes.
Do you
yes, it
that?
Was.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes. And then it slowly just even that disappeared. So now the vestiges of the Anime Con at New York Comic Con are the vendor areas, basically. That kind of there's a nice little section in the dealer's room that still is pretty heavy on the anime and manga areas, some of the book areas as well. So, but yeah, it's lost its identity. There is another one called the Liberty City Anime Con, which has only been around for a couple of years, and it's pretty small. We're talking over only a few thousand people, so less than 5,000 people, in fact, basically in a hotel in New York City. So that's not a really big presence. This is being made or managed by the same people who do something called AwesomeCon, which has a pretty good reputation. These are all people who used to work for Reed Pop, who is the company behind New York Comic Con. So these people know how to run a con. And the fact that it's at the Javits with this much industry support, this is probably as good as you're going to get when it comes to a chance to see a well-run anime convention in a major city like New York. New York is just, as people over on Anime Jam Session have said before, anime cons in general tend to go to smaller areas. You do have the ones that are in, you know, like the bigger huge cons that happen on the West Coast. You have a pretty big one that happens. It was in Baltimore and it's moving to Washington, D.C., at least the area. But you don't usually see anything outside of like Anime Boston, which has managed to establish itself. Big, huge places, right? I mean, New York is just, it's hard to get in there. I mean, I'm right now trying to find accommodations for New York Comic Con, and it's expensive to go there. So there are options in the tri-state area that are cheaper. So it needs to have that kind of industry backing in order to survive. And I'm curious. I'm sure some of our friends over at Anime Jam Session will be checking it out. I think I'm at least favorable to the idea of checking it out just to see what it looks like. I doubt it's going to fill the Javits Center. So that's going to be interesting. I wonder if it'll feel like that Mission Trek thing that happened not so long ago, where it was it felt a little small mm-hmm. because it didn't fill too much of the Javits. But we'll see. I mean, it's a year away, right? So I hope that it works out, because it would be nice to have a well-run, well-backed anime convention in New York.
Yeah, definitely.
And I just like the Javits. I mean, I know that it's a little unwieldy, but I'm used to it now.
Yes.
Take the ferry.
Yeah, thank God for Uber, right? All right, let's move over to some movie news. And I'm going to start it off here. It seems like Mission Impossible 6 is going to happen, because Tom Cruise has accepted signing on for the new Christopher McQuarrie film.
He's accepted the mission, okay.
He has, yes. Probably not shocking, but it is now definitely back on track. Pre-production resuming on the Super Spy sequel. In case you missed it, it did appear as though Tom Cruise might not be returning to the role of Ethan Hunt after a salary dispute over the sequel reared between Paramount and Cruise's team. But it also hit a negotiation snag when issues surrounding the back-end profit participation got heated. But after the delay to the start date, it seems like everything is good and it will go into production in spring of 2017. So there you go. Fans of that franchise should now be fairly happy. Next, we have some interesting news about the performance of some of our superhero movies lately. So,
yeah, this is news of a Suicide Squad, which of course had a big opening weekend take here, and then some precipitous declines. It actually had a 66% drop off in its second weekend, and while a lot of these big superhero movies and blockbusters do have a drop off, that was a particularly precipitous one. However, at this point, Suicide Squad's global tally is now gone north of 700 million, 718.8 to be precise, which is notable because that means it is now past the 714.4 million that Winter Soldier took in 2 years ago. And this, of course, was Winter Soldier's total take. Suicide Squad, it's in its seventh week and is actually still taking in box office. In terms of its domestic take, it has dropped quite a bit. It's now, in fact, last weekend, it only took in 4.55 million. But this is the global take, and I know I have been hearing some tell of this that Suicide Squad was doing quite well in all the other areas of the world outside the U.S. It is also particularly notable because Suicide Squad, unlike Winter Soldier, has in fact not had a release in China, so it hasn't had that large market to bump up these numbers, but certainly, whatever one may have thought of the film, in terms of what it's taking in for the studio, it is performing quite impressively.
There you go. That just goes to show you never quite know what you're going to get with even these movies that come in with perhaps not the best of reviews, right? Gary, a couple of unusual films here for us to talk about.
I was a little, one surprised me and the other one shocked me. The first one that we can talk about is, it's been announced that, Stan Lee will be bringing a movie to the big screen. I wouldn't expect any tights in this particular one though. While we're familiar with Stan Lee from his, superhero, fame, he's looking at a different project this time. He's working on adapting the various monkey warrior myths from both Chinese and Indian culture for the big screen with, Sharad Devarajan from Graphic India, a production company. Also, Chinese filmmakers Shinework Pictures are also being involved in this, so they're getting money from several different sources to develop the film, which will be known as Monkey Master, and it's drawing, of course, from legends, and then it is transposing them, into a more modern setting. Lee has indicated that his interest in Eastern culture is what prompted him to start this. He says he's always been fascinated by Chinese and Indian cultures, which are so philosophically rich in tradition and morality. It hasn't exactly said how he will merge these two together, but it will involve martial arts skills. So no cast or director have been assigned yet, so we'll have to wait and see. And they have not announced an actual release date, but they're hoping to start production before the end of 2017.
Yeah, an interesting new kind of property. Not what we're used to seeing. And then we have another film that is in production that I was not expecting to hear about.
This one was, I sort of scratched my head, and I guess I've played the game once or twice. So what they've announced is they're taking the game that you've probably seen on large screens in an arcade somewhere, Fruit Ninja, and they feel that it's the next Angry Birds. New Line Cinema has nabbed the film rights to bring this game to the big screen. It will be a comedy, just in case you were worried it was going to be a drama. It's going to be a family comedy centering on a team of misfits who are recruited to become fruit ninjas in order to save the world. The game itself was released in early 2010 and has been a very popular both on the arcade circuit as well as downloaded on most smartphones as an app. They have not announced a release date. However, it is going to be produced by Sam White and Tara Farney, and who have also worked on How to Survive a Garden Gnome Attack. Well, I don't know if this will reach Oscar caliber. They do have people who are able to bring things to screen, and they will be doing so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
By the way, John, I forgot to mention the most important part. the villain is a pineapple.
Oh, well. Yes,
just, you know, take that tension out. Who's, you know, who are they going to be working against? A pineapple. They are sharp and, you know, hard to handle sometimes.
Indeed.
Yes. Yeah,
I can with this, John, please.
I know, yeah. I can tell. And I think, is this the effect of the Angry Birds movie still making a lot of money, even though Angry Birds hasn't been relevant in pop culture in forever?
Apparently, yes. Although it does amaze me how far we've come in a decade since when I was going through the retro arcade over the gaming section, the gaming area to Dragon Con, they did have one of the joust games, and I think we all remember how much derision was placed on the our old friends over at Slice of Sci-Fi when the possible joust adaptation was announced, now they're just adapting these games left and right, but unfortunately we still haven't seen the Joust movie.
No, we haven't. I'm kind of surprised by that personally, but maybe I shouldn't be, but I am.
I was hoping to see it when Pixels came out, but no such luck.
Ah, well. All right, well, let's see. That means that we can move over to casting news. And I'm going to start us off here with some news about the Netflix Lost in Space remake. And yes, it seems that they have locked in the first cast member. Falling Skies actress Taylor Russell will be playing Judy, according to TV Line. The role of John Maureen's eldest child was originated by Marta Kirsten in the 60s, or Marta Kirsten, excuse me, in the 60s series, later played by Heather Graham in the feature film in 1998. Russell's other notable credit is Lifetime's unauthorized Saved by the Bell story, in which she played Lark Voorhees. The 10-episode family drama sci-fi adventure, which was formerly ordered in June and set to premiere in 2018, will take its cues from the original series and follow the Robinson family as they are forced to come together in a time of crisis. Stranded light years from their intended destination, they find themselves battling a strange new alien environment and their own personal demons. That sounds exactly like what the original show was like.
Personal demons?
Right. Don't you remember that?
Well, I guess Dr. Smith was everyone else's personal demon.
Yes, exactly.
But I never really sensed inner turmoil from the Robinson family. I must have missed something. I'll have to go back and rewatch.
Yeah. I think you're going to have to, because it was. I thought it was pretty clearly right there on the screen.
It must have been all the hugging and laughing that, you know, really, you know, was hiding stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely it was. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. And I'm just going to move on now. And the next article will be... coming from you, Edmund, I think this one makes sense for you to discuss.
Absolutely. This is casting news for the third season of Fargo. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, most recently seen in 10 Cloverfield Lane, will be joining the series. She will play Nikki Swango, a crafty and alluring recent parolee with a passion for competitive bridge playing. So yes, I see Fargo is going to be continuing in its realm of interesting character studies. Of course, she will be joining Ewan McGregor, cast in the twin roles of brothers Emmett and Ray Stussy, as we did and actually mentioned, I think, a few weeks ago. And also, Carrie Coon from The Leftovers has also joined the series as Gloria Burgle, a very practical chief of police. And Fargo season 3 will be debuting next spring. Of course, as always, Noah Hawley has been keeping things close to his vest. But it is rumored to be set in 2010, following the events of the first season. So we will be looping back to the beginning. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, if you hadn't seen 10 Cloverfield Lane, has also appeared in Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Live Free or Die Hard, and Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. And also, for those of you who did actually stick with Brain Dead through to the end last week, she was also starring in that latest CBS summer political satire.
Yes, she was. All right. Next on the list here, we have some news out of, a film that I still don't know that we need, because didn't we already try to do this before with Kevin Costner, and we all know how that ended up? Or Russell Crowe, I believe it was.
Yeah, the Kevin Costner one I actually don't mind so much. Yeah, the Russell Crowe one
was the one. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Well, anyway, yes, I will deliver the news because I get the hard-hitting stories. Anyway, what we're talking about is 50 Shades of Grey star Jamie Dornan is in final talks to for a role in the new, well, not new, retake, new imagining of Robin Hood. The title for the movie is going to be Robin Hood Origins. It's being produced by Lionsgate, and they're going to do a new take on the classic story of the man who robbed from the rich and gave to the poor. They've already cast Taron Egerton as Robin Hood. Jamie Foxx will play Little John, and Eve Hewinson will portray Maid Marian in the retelling of the story. Dornan himself is actually being cast to play Will Scarlet, a member of the Band of Merry Men, who's rather hot-headed and often is the fanciest dresser of the bunch. Now, for one of the twists in this version, however, Will Scarlet is actually going to be Marian's husband, who won't be happy when he learns that she is in love with Robin Hood. They're planning to start shooting in January of 2017 in Budapest, and we'll have to see if he actually does lock in. He was in final talks, and as of this recording, it hadn't been fully confirmed. So we'll have to wait and see, but oh, geez, I hope they can do justice to this. You know, it seems like such a simple story, yet sometimes the twists and turns they put onto this myth often seem to give it a bad taste.
Mm. This is true. But I don't know. We'll see. I'm not too thrilled with that casting, but we'll wait until we hear more. I'm far more excited about this next bit.
Yes, this is more casting news for the film adaptation of the manga Battle Angel Alita. We've had various bits and pieces of casting news in recent weeks, but the latest is that Ed Skrein from Deadpool and The Transporter Refueled, and of course the original Dario in Game of Thrones, has now signed on as well. He will be playing a villain, according to The Hollywood Reporter, known as Zapan, a cyborg antagonist with a grudge against Alita. We don't have a specific plot for the film yet, but it is being based on a 9-volume manga series, so they certainly have lots of material to choose from, and it chronicles the adventures of Alita, an amnesiac cyborg with incredible fighting skill, in the remains of a futuristic United States. Alita uses her enhanced abilities to make her way as a bounty hunter and track down dangerous cyborg criminals. And it's expected to go into production in October, with a planned release date of July of 2018.
Very cool. Looking forward to that for sure. All right. Next on the list, we have a little bit more news about the Pacific Rim sequel. Aftermath star Levi Meaden, that's the word I can't say. Anyway, has joined the cast opposite John Boyega, Scott Eastwood, Kaylee Spaney, and Jing Tian. And the sequel is directed by Stephen DeKnight, with Guillermo del Toro, John Jashny, Femi Ogins, Mary Parent, and Thomas Tull producing. At least half of those names I actually pronounced okay. Plot details are vague, with Boyega playing the son of the character played by Idris Elba, whose character sacrificed his life in the original film. So, Maiden is joining the franchise as Ilya, an irreverent and offbeat cadet. So there we are. That seems to be continuing to shape up pretty nicely. We'll see if it ever actually gets onto the big screen, and it has had such a long road getting there. And finally, we have one last bit here that, Gary, I gave to you because you can give us a little bit of character background.
I will do my best. What they're announced is for Supergirl, they're adding yet another actress in, and a rather notable one, at least as far as I've enjoyed her work for years. They've announced that Brenda Strong will be having a recurring role in the next season of Supergirl. According to Entertainment Weekly, she makes quite a first impression, which is described as a fun mix of comedy and action, along with bringing some interesting exchanges between Kara and James on the series. Ms. Strong has been nominated in the past for 2 Emmy Awards for her work on Desperate Housewives. She's also made multiple various guest appearances over the years in what I refer to as the science fiction / fantasy genre, including The 100, Fear the Walking Dead, Seinfeld, Twin Peaks, Party of Five, as well as roles in the movie Spaceballs and in Starship Troopers. So she definitely is, I would say, familiar with this side of the entertainment world. That's at the moment all they've announced. They haven't announced any particular character for her, just that it's going to be an upcoming recurring role. And given Calista Flockhart's changed to recurring guest star from season regular, it makes me wonder if she wouldn't fit that role to some extent. So that's where I'm guessing she's going to somehow go into to fill some of Calista Flockhart's heels.
Yeah, well, it's quite possible, huh?
Yeah, well, she was pretty good as a TV producer on Sports Night, too. So one of my favorite appearances of hers.
Yeah, so I mean, that's where it seems to be going to me. I can definitely see her being a good fit in that role. So if it's something else, we'll have to wait and see. But I'd like to see her in that role. I think she could do it justice.
Mm-hmm. Very true. All right. Well, I think that brings us to the close for this particular episode. News took up the entire time slot. So what we're going to do is next time get into the episodic discussion and then some of our recent feedback. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.